welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. In this podcast, we'll be having discussions around the secrets which attract lasting, healthy, fulfilling relationships, creating a healthy mindset, and what women should know and understand about men. Introducing your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, relationship expert, trainer, speaker, and best-selling author of The Cupid's Bow Technique. Lynn's mission is to have a positive impact in reducing divorce, domestic violence, and suicide.
Welcome to the Hearts Entwined podcast. This is your host, Lynn Smith, the Queen of Hearts, and I've got something really titillating to talk about today. And the topic is your orgasm violent? And I've got a fantastically interesting guest. Her name is Tanya Diamond. She's a life strategist and Tantra lineage holder. So we're going to find out all about who she is, what she does, and this particular topic. So welcome, Tanya.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. So I've heard of, you know, headings in terms of people's industries and business life strategists, but I've not heard of a Tantra lineage holder. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about who you are and what that actually means in terms of what you do, Tanya.
Absolutely. So I'll say that as a life strategist, basically, I solve problems and challenges people have in their life and business. So that can range anything from parenting to having better sex to building online businesses. So my day is pretty interesting, let's just say. And then Tantra, and I've been doing this for over 42 years. So Tantra lineage holder, Tantra in the West, people think of as sex. But the reality is classical Tantra is an ancient technology that is very dogmatic and scientific and ritualized. So I studied with an actual Tantra guru 40 something years ago, and it's all about energy mastery. And so Tantra means the path. So the path to energy mastery. In the West, people hear Tantra, they think of what is actually Neo-Tantra, which is having better orgasms, sex, connection, heart connection, things like that. And the difference between lineage Tantra and Neo-Tantra is vast and huge. There's very few things that are actually even remotely similar. And I know that because I teach and have studied both. So neither one is better than the other, just saying they're vastly different. And I'm always on a mission to help educate people that there's a difference. And so Tantra, lineage Tantra, is passed down from guru to student in an unbroken lineage that is orally and energetically transmitted, and it can't be read about or understood in any other way. Neo Tantra is a hodgepodge of Ayurvedic medicine, Kama Sutra, yoga, breath work, pink, whatever you decided to do last weekend. And, you know, but it mainly centers around sex. So that's kind of the short end of all of the short synopsis of that.
It sounds like you've had a very interesting life, Tanya, and perhaps we'll touch on other topics in other episodes going forward. I'm very curious about tapping into a lot of the knowledge and expertise you've got. But in terms of the topic we're going to be talking about today, is your orgasm violent? You know, I think the word violent, you know, is quite evocative, isn't it? So
yeah.
Tell us more about what you mean by that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I loved the look on your face when I said it, because you were like, you mean intense? What? No, I'm actually specifically using the word violent for a reason. Well, here's the deal. And I get a lot of flack. I'm that controversial protagonist, you know, the antagonist person that gets kicked out of every Facebook group on the planet and things like that, because I'm always, as a strategist and a biohacker, I'm studying cognitive behavior, psychology, neurobiology, neurochemistry. I'm what they call a polymath, which means I have expertise in hundreds and hundreds of subjects. So looking at orgasm, from even a sex positive space, there's different ways to have orgasms. And I don't mean like clitoral, vaginal, you know, that type. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in tension versus in relaxation.
Interesting. Now, you've got me very curious now.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So most women force orgasm through tension. And it's interesting that women and men can actually have orgasms with not very little arousal. we can actually focus on it enough and create muscular tension enough that we can have what I call a violent orgasm. And that is one that we force with very little pleasure. The reason I call it violent is because what it does to the body, what it does to the nervous system, what it does to the energetic system, it's violent. It creates dysregulated nervous systems. It doesn't flood us with all the great hormones that we want. It sends us seeking dopamine hits, but it never really gives us the nourishment that falling into orgasm can.
Right. Tell us more. This is getting intriguing.
It's like, okay, what's up? So most women can get off on their own within about 90 seconds, and men too. Men can go from flaccid to ejaculation in 90 seconds. Biology kind of designed men that way. Men almost always have that explosive type of more violent orgasm because that's what they're taught. And then women also, most women learn how to masturbate in a very specific way. Lots of breath holding, lots of tension in their legs, tension in their abdomen, tension in their butts. And you can force that out literally with zero actual arousal, without engorgement, without being that turned on. You can just make it happen. When you do it like that, what happens is it feels violent to the body. Most women don't want to be touched after that either. Like if you have an orgasm like that, you're kind of like a no-go after that. It's like, that's it. It was intense. You know, maybe if you even have a headache, if you've used enough tension and focus to try to make it happen. And we've all had that, right? Where you're like, yep, almost there, but, and then, you know, somebody, you hear a noise and it's gone. If that's
that so describes
right
what I can relate to.
right. It's like, and what just happened there, but it's no longer there. Yeah. Those are orgasms that don't have big arousal behind them. And they're elusive then. And they're always like tension, trying to get it, everything has to be perfect. Your leg at the right angle, everything's got to be just right. You don't have enough arousal going on. So you're literally forcing muscular spasms versus falling into, because when you have enough arousal, orgasms happen with zero tension or breath holding. You just fall into them like falling off the edge of a waterfall. And they last. They ripple through your body, your whole body, not just generally focused, but through your whole body in a way that's actually nourishing your endocrine system, nourishing your nervous system, nourishing your neurochemistry and your hormones and everything else. And you can keep going on those. Those can ripple. In fact, I can take a breath and have an orgasm, because the arousal level is high enough in how I live that it's not all just stored in one place in my genitals. So
yeah, you know, I can relate to that as well, you know, having multiple orgasms one after the other, literally.
Right. In relaxation.
Yes.
Without trying to hang on to them or make them happen and just relax into them. Right. So I know, you know, and of course, then the most popular thing in the world, and I hate this word. I just want to say this whole squirting word. I hate that word. I don't know why I hate that word. Probably because, you know, I'm neurodivergent. That word just bothers me. Probably because it's the 150 phone calls I got when that first came out years and years ago. Women squirting. Every man's on the phone saying, how do I make women squirt? That's also tension. Because if you're ejaculating as a woman and there's it's a big flood, like there's actually like a trajectory behind it, usually that's bladder spasms. Whereas falling into the little teeny glands, the skin glands, letting off fluid in female ejaculation is a relaxation response, not a spasm response. So if you think muscularly, orgasm is tension or non-tension, right? Ejaculation, not tension or non-tension. And men can have non-tension ejaculation and orgasm as well. But we're also used to the tension part. Why is that? Well, we're busy. Who knows why? We don't want to get caught. You know, we learn how to masturbate. It really, how we do that informs our sex life for most of us.
Yeah, because I'm assuming, especially for young guys, teenage guys or whatever, when they first start masturbating, they're frightened of probably, like you say, getting caught, and women too, I suppose.
Yeah,
and so that you're trying to reach that quickly, aren't you?
Yeah, get there faster, get it over with, or in procreatively, I don't even know if that's a word, but given that we are biologically programmed for survival and procreation, procreation doesn't require pleasure. It requires, you know, sperm meet egg. It expi it requires
More
expulsion.
practical.
Yeah, it requires completion, expulsion, and actually trajectory as far as men go, right? This the further the sperm goes, the farther it up it goes, the more, right? And so yeah, all of this idea. And then as our nervous systems in the last 20 years, I've watched people go from, you know, some people were anxious to now everybody's anxious, everybody's nervous system is dysregulated, everybody's a mess, and pleasure has decreased. In fact, I remember when they were doing studies on women's low arousal disorder. And I don't know if you know this, but for a medication to come out, they have to have a disorder, right? So there was
Yeah.
all the Viagra for men, right? It's been around for a
Yes.
while. And because, of course, if a man can't get it up, then oh my God, let's just spend millions of dollars on getting that solved. Well, then they thought, well, can we use Viagra on women? But they couldn't do any studies because there was no disorder. So literally, a pharmaceutical company came up with a survey that doctors gave to their women patients. And the questions were things like, do you sometimes have problems getting aroused? Tell me a woman that's not checking that yes. You know, do sometimes it takes a long time to get it to an orgasm? How many women are checking yes? And so there were questions like that that then led to the diagnosis of low, you know, female low sexual arousal disorder.
Well, there I've
Instead
been educated again. I hadn't heard of that.
Instead of just saying most women's sex lives are more complicated and when we're stressed out, we just don't have good sex lives. I mean, no, or men aren't really good at sex for a lot of time too, right? So anyway, so then of course the whole Viagra thing came out, or they're working on that. And there's actually G-spot injections. So if you don't really want to have foreplay and mess around with getting aroused, you can, during your lunch hour, you can go get silicone and other fillers injected under your G spot so it hangs down lower, so you don't have to work hard at arousal.
Blimey.
So now, understanding that I don't think any of these things are necessary, I'm not morally or judgmentally like this is bad, but what it shows us really is that we are not doing the things we need to do to stay in pleasure and to live in pleasure. And most people are using orgasm as a medication tool. If I get, you know, one off, I can go to sleep. And that's usually because our nervous systems are so messed up. We're looking for some kind of medication, right? When you do that, you train your body to have these more violent orgasms just to get them over with, even if you're not that aroused, so that you can get that hit so that you feel more downregulated. But it never really takes you all the way down, just like caffeine doesn't raise you up. If you drink coffee, you're zero. After drinking coffee, you're now at minus 40, and you have to drink coffee to go back to your normal zero. This is what's happening in arousal. Most people are down like 200 feet down in the basement, floor 200 of the basement, and we're trying to bring our arousal up at the appropriate time. And so we're using force and we're using fantasy, checking out of our body. Because, yes, I'm one of the few sex coaches in the world that probably tells you don't fantasize. You're outsourcing your pleasure. How about feeling what you're feeling? Well, I don't feel anything, Tanya. Great. That's the problem.
Yeah, I get it.
Using porn, using fantasy, using outside resources to jumpstart your pleasure means that you're not innately connected to it.
I agree with that 100%, 100%, and then very aligned with what you're talking about there. You know, because I'm not somebody. I mean, yes, you know, when I was less educated, less aware in my 20s and what have you, you know, maybe reading, you know, graphically sexual stories and stuff like that would be a way of connecting to myself and getting aroused. But as I've got older, I definitely know that my body wants to feel it, and you know, I go within now more than without, so to speak.
Absolutely. Because we're not, even though we have menstrual cycles and we have cycles, as far as being able to get pregnant, we can do that year round, which tells us as a species, we're created to be aroused all the time. Right. And so that arousal that most people are uncomfortable with, well, Tanya, if you're like a 16-year-old boy all the time, aren't you frustrated? No, because I use arousal for productivity. I use arousal to fuel creativity. I use arousal to be charismatic on stage. You know, that's an energy source that's pretty infinite if you're not violently using arousal. And so I do use that word violent. And I know it's like the first time most people ever hear it. But if you, I think this is making sense when you hear it like that. It's kind of like, oh, if your orgasm leaves you drained, and there's a way to feel, right? Kind of like, ugh, drained, don't touch me. Maybe you have a headache or you just don't like, oh, I just got to like check out. Actually, the other side of that, falling into orgasm, leaves you inspired, leaves you energized, leaves you curious and creative and inspired and feeling awesome sauce instead of feeling like, ugh. So just the contraction difference, you know, just think of expansion and contraction. One is expanded, the other is contracted.
Yeah, I've definitely experienced both sides of that coin and totally get and understand what you're saying in relation to how you feel afterwards and in terms of what is the best experience. And for me now, it has to be, you know, that pleasure of going in within and feeling that creative energy. I feel like it's fabulous, you know, for both partners involved in terms of the sexual energy in itself, not only sort of, I suppose, certainly for somebody my age, I'm not of reproductive years anymore, but, you know, I still feel like I'm creating, I'm birthing something on the back of sexual energy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I went through menopause at 48 and I'm 62, and my sex drive's higher and more awesome than it ever was. Currently, I'm celibate, having my best sex ever with myself. And I'm a firm believer in being your own best lover, no matter what. Like that's a pretty imperative thing. But the thing biologically, cognitive, so people with brain fog, things like that, you want to help your brain fog, don't have violent orgasms. Actually, have pleasure orgasms. You want to help longevity. You want to change around some cellular things going on with you. Absolutely. I recently was at the doctor, and I know I can too much information on most platforms, but this one definitely not. I was at the doctor, and years ago I had started to suffer from vaginal atrophy, right? Where after menopause, and I'd had cancer and chemo, I had ovarian cancer, and I had chemo. And my vaginal tissues were just like thinning out and getting really uncomfortable. And through the process of changing my attitude around this, right? Like I'm no longer going to try to have an orgasm no matter what. So that's like falling into that. And then I also went to 100% carnivore diet 2 years ago. My doctor recently said to me, wow, you look internally look like a 20-year-old.
Really?
Totally change and reverse mucous membrane atrophy. Yeah. And bring all of that back. And when we inspire our neurochemistry, when our neurochemistry isn't, when it's triggered in the right way, right? So, and that's what I'm saying about that pleasure falling into what that does is gives us all those happy feel good hormones without the high dopamine hits. By the way, if you keep high dopamine hitting too, you're going to want to eat more carbs. I'm just saying this has all a correlation here. But if you're a smooth run, having those smooth run falling into more what I call luxuriously luscious orgasm, then your neurochemistry changes and it downregulates your nervous system and your cortisol levels fall, which means you start healing all of the things that might be a problem. So I love that orgasm, nonviolent orgasm as a way of healing your nervous system trauma, regulating ADHD and all sorts of other things that have neurochemical pieces in them that need to be fixed. Whereas we're spending all our time on devices and crazy stuff like that, we're always being bombarded. So this idea that, you know, our society is chronically overstressed, chronically high cortisol, chronically sleep deprived, chronically too much blue light, not enough outside. One of the most beautiful and effective ways to actually start changing that is by learning how to, and I can tell your audience how to fall into orgasm versus force it out or push it out or tense it out.
So for those people listening that can identify with probably having more violent type orgasms and not really sure how to reverse that or change that, so they have more pleasurable or falling into type orgasms, what would your advice be around that, Tanya?
Yeah, well, first, women need to get rid of their internal 5-minute clock. You know, if you're having sex with a partner, you know, and he's been touching you, you're going down, you're like, oh, you only have 5 minutes, it's probably over, I'm not getting there. You know, we're all like, am I going to happen? It's not going to happen. Oh my God, okay, never mind. Let's just know you're doing this to get to the other good stuff, probably. And so what, you know, would be called the other good stuff. It's making sure, first of all, that you don't have orgasms quickly. Like, don't push for an orgasm. If you feel your breath holding, your butt has tension, your abdominal muscles are tense, you've stopped breathing. That's the really big thing, right? And you're just struggling or feeling that tension, stop doing that. That's a habit, and stop doing it. Well, Tanya, yeah, that then I'm never going to have an orgasm. Okay, that's a fear, right? You're used to doing it that way. Now, you want to give yourself permission to take as long as you need to build pleasure and engorgement. Most women have orgasms without ever being engorged. It can take a woman up to 2 hours to become engorged if she's never done that and she's used to these other orgasms. So it's going to take some time. Pleasure, pleasure, but Tanya, I'm bored after half an hour. Yeah, I hear you. That's sad. And you can fix that. Right? What if my partner gets bored touching me for 45 minutes or an hour and a half? Well, you break it up. You don't have performative sex. You don't just go to have intercourse. Everybody gets theirs and gets off and goes to bed. Now you can go to sleep. You stop doing that. It starts with yourself. Start pleasuring yourself more. Micro doses of pleasure throughout the day, right? A little touch here, a little touch there. You can stroke your nipple here. You can touch your clit there. Just start feeling yourself as a sexual being more often without trying to get off, with just building arousal. At some point, your body
giving yourself foreplay, sort of thing.
Foreplay, all play. And pretty soon your body has so much in there, you have to expand the pleasure instead of feel the frustration to push it out. Because pushing it out for a woman is that's violent. That's more masculine energy, push out, right? And that creates violence in our nervous system. Not so bad for men. It's a little bit different, but they can have a different experience too. So you just keep building and building. You spend a week, spend 2 weeks, spend 3 weeks pleasuring yourself without going to orgasm. And trust me, your body will get aroused enough. It will have one without you even.
You'll be grabbing him and ripping his shirt off as he walks through the door.
Right. Yeah. And then say no for another week. Just to build up, because orgasm will be stuck in your genitals until you allow it. It takes up too much space and it has to leak out or expand beyond that. That's how to have those full body orgasms, by taking a breath, because your body's already so aroused, it just needs a breath, and all of a sudden that's explosive. Tanya, how do you ever get anything done if you're having orgasms all the time? Well, my marine accountability buddy tells me I get more done by 6 a.m. than most of the guys do in a week. So it's great for fuel. Let's just say that.
Yeah, sounds really good. So what about, I mean, you touched on, and I just wanted to, for the benefit of those listeners that are not aware, or they probably are aware, that they experience more bladder leakage or pressure whilst orgasming. What causes that?
Oh, well, so when, and depending on age range too, right? And just if you've had a lot of babies, how your pelvic floor muscles are. Two tight pelvic muscles will cause bladder spasms during sex. And that'll cause pee. That'll have your bladder will spasm, right? Urine will come out. Two lax muscles will also do the same thing. The bladder thins out and doesn't have the control anymore. And so that, now the whole like female ejaculation, is that pee? Is it that? Well, if you watch a lot of the stars in porn that are doing that, like a gallon of fluid flying across the room to 6 feet later, that's like bladder. Your skin glands can't do that. They don't physically are capable of projectile like that. Does it matter if it's pee or if it's, you know, fluid, women's prostate fluid? No, if you're having a good time, who cares? But if that's bothering you, then either, like I said, either A, you've got your tissues are friable, and so they're not really contracting or holding urine anymore, or you're doing too much ramming up into the area of the G-spot where the urethra is and creating spasms. And those spasms that are creating bladder leakage because the bladder is spasming, is pushing it. So sitting in a deep squat, every woman in the world, first of all, in the US, we do more Kegels than any place in the world, and we have the worst incontinence issues. Least babies too, worst incontinence, because we're doing Kegels. So what you want to do is sit in a deep squat, heels flat on the floor, you know, the deep squat that a lot of countries just naturally sit in when they're just hanging out.
Yeah.
Start doing that, because that it relaxes one of your pelvic floor muscles while strengthening the others. And that's actually more powerful than Kegels for anything.
Sit Thank you. That's great advice, because I think a lot of women are self-conscious about anything to do with a bladder leakage, aren't they? And especially if it happens during sex.
Right. And the reality is, like, it happens, it's going to happen, like, no matter what, because you got a lot of pressure, a lot of friction happening down there anyway. Unless your bladder, even if your bladder is completely empty, sex and orgasm on its own will cause spasming, even if you're not overdoing it. But certainly really jam, you know, a lot of push into the G-spot, a lot of hard friction with the G-spot, a lot of banging, like hard penile banging anyway, isn't really great for our tissues. And what I think, if you need somebody to really do it hard, you may not be feeling much. And then that just perpetuates the numbness and the desensitization. So I think do less, you know, feel more, do less, feel more in terms of orgasm and having sex and having intercourse and having finger play. Resensitize. It's a great thing. It means you become more aroused more easily.
That's fantastic advice. So, Tanya, for those listeners that are interested in finding out a lot more about your massive amount of experience and knowledge around these topics, what's your best contact information?
LearningTantra.com is my website. And from there, you can easily access me, LearningTantra.com.
Excellent. And any final words of wisdom around, is your orgasm violent, to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're listening to this and your first thought is like, screw you, you know, you're really upset now and angry because you feel like I've orgasm shamed you, or, you know, told you your orgasm isn't good enough or whatever, just know that you are happily doing whatever it is you want to do. If it's triggering to you, I hear you. If it's helpful, awesome. You don't like it, fine. Most people love me or hate me. There's no middle ground usually when people find out about me or what I do. So I just empower you. Here you go. I'm empowering you to do whatever you want with this information. I will say that, you know, most of the people I've talked to before about this have to start with the, oh my gosh, you're, you know, orgasm shaming me, whatever. That's where they start. But if they actually start experimenting, if you keep an open mind and get curious and start trying different things, you might have a different feeling about it later.
Absolutely. I think we don't know what we don't know until we do.
Yeah, right. And then we don't know other stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, I always keep my open mind on these things, you know, even if I feel initially triggered by it, or whatever word you want to use, and think, you know, like you said, people, I wouldn't feel shame about it, but people can feel like, because they've not been made aware of this information, that you might be shaming them about something. But it's not about that, you know, it's about knowing that there's a better way, you know, and you maybe didn't know that before.
Yeah, or a different way. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, try something different. That's what we're here to do. A little texture in your life.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Tanya. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And I really found this conversation massively interesting.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
So it just leaves me to say, listeners, that true love starts with opening our hearts. And until next time, goodbye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Hearts Entwined podcast. You can follow Lynn via the Facebook group Two Hearts Entwined, or search Lynn Smith, inspirational speaker at LinkedIn, or email lynn@hearts-entwined.com. That's L-Y-N at hearts-entwined.com. Remember, true love starts with opening our hearts.